Yes, you may. And you may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Michael Coughlin. I'm here on behalf of the appellant Hemmick Family Farm. And I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, if that's possible. The reasonable probability of rezoning is a factor to be determined in considering the value of a property taken in a condemnation case. It's something that any buyer would take into account. Therefore, it was an abuse of discretion based on a mistake of law for the trial court to exclude, per se, all of Hemmick's evidence as to the reasonable probability of the rezoning of the property. To be clear, Hemmick and its experts did not value the property taken as if it had been rezoned. Instead, as VDOT's brief on page 22 acknowledges, Charles Dennis, Hemmick's appraiser, applied a discount to account for the difference in zoning between the Hemmick property and the raw land sales that he used to value the property. There's three main questions that I think the court needs to answer related to the reasonable probability of rezoning issue. First, is this proper evidence in general? And I think that the clear answer is yes, because every single state court that has addressed this issue has found that reasonable probability of rezoning is something that can and should be considered in a condemnation case. And this court's jurisprudence is in line with those decisions. Two,
would that include downzoning?
I'm aware of a state court case where, yes, downzoning was something that actually could be considered. So here, we believe that based on the expert testimony and the pattern of zoning actions by the Board of Supervisors indicates that an upzoning would have been reasonably probable. So the second issue was Hemmick's evidence too speculative? And we think that clearly it was not. There are many factors going for the particular property, where it's situated, that it's surrounded by commercially and industrially zoned properties. Those properties were also used for those types of purposes. It had access to two public roads. It had access to utilities. It was designated as commercial in the Culpeper County Comprehensive Plan at the time of the taking. So we therefore believe that the evidence...
But having said that, no application had been filed, right?
That is correct.
So what other evidence is there that there might be a rezoning or it might be approved other than the future land use map?
The property was surrounded by those type of parcels that were already used and planned and zoned for commercial purposes. The property had access to public utilities. It had 16 sewer taps available to it through an agreement with the county when it dedicated 20 acres for a sewage pump station. It was within viewing distance of the Culpeper County High School. And there are other cases from other states that clearly don't require that a zoning application be pending. Because the test here is, what would a willing buyer and willing seller pay for the property, or what would that transaction look like? It's not what does this owner per se have going on with respect to their property. So those other factors can absolutely be considered. Whether there's a zoning application or not is not dispositive.
So your basic point is it's relevant. It's just a matter of weight, and the fact finder can consider it as long as in a fair market evaluation a reasonable buyer and a reasonable seller would talk about the subject.
Absolutely. And to show that it is something that's considered, just look at VDOT's own appraisal. VDOT's appraiser considered the reasonable probability of rezoning as being probable, but only after the taking, after the project was completed. whereas we believe that at the time of the taking, the property could be rezoned. So there you have like the setup in Carverly where you have two experts, you know, having a legitimate dispute over something possibly, but the level playing field wasn't given to the landowner because all of our evidence was excluded.
They could come in and say, it's never going to happen. I can tell you why. Here are the five reasons why it's never going to happen. They think it's going to happen, but it's not, and let the fact finder figure it out.
And that's all we were looking for, but obviously weren't given that opportunity by the trial court. So then the third issue, as to reasonable probability, I believe, was Helmick's appraiser's use of commercially zoned properties and then applying a discount the appropriate methodology. And I think that that's up for ultimately the finder of fact to decide. And there's nothing in USPAP or in the state code that would prohibit one from doing it that way, and I can say that it's commonly done, especially when those are the best type of sales out there.
Well, if people consider probability of zoning in the future in determining fair market value, why didn't you come up with examples of agricultural land that has a good probability of being rezoned and how much it sold for?
Because those sales didn't exist, and VDOT's expert acknowledged that there were no agriculturally zoned properties in Culpeper County that were also planned commercial that he was able to find that had then transacted. And so we were stuck with the sales that were available to us. What we did put on in our proffer is the zoning actions by the Culpeper Board of Supervisors since, I think, 2005 that showed that they had taken agriculturally zoned properties and rezoned them to light industrial or heavy industrial or commercial. So there was a pattern of the board of zoning
those properties. Those properties had to have been bought at some point in time. Those exact properties that you're talking about, you could have found out what they sold for.
Well, what happens frequently is that those properties are sold under a contingency, and so the sale doesn't close until the zoning has actually happened. Here,
because the value of the property isn't there until the zoning has actually happened.
But the reasonable probability of rezoning adds value in and of itself. And mind you, remember, the concept here is our client didn't want to sell his property. This is under the power of eminent domain. We're forced to determine the value of the property at the time based on the factors associated with the property. So we wouldn't have then the benefit of then applying for a zoning and seeing what that sale would be because our property was confiscated through the power of eminent domain as allowed to.
Let me ask two questions that I don't know that are in the record, but I think we can take judicial notice of. Does Culpeper County have a land use tax, a bifurcated tax for one rate for land use and one rate for everything else?
Yes, so, and this property, I believe, was, in order to save taxes, placed in the land use taxation program.
You can only be in a land use taxation program if you're agriculturally zoned and actively using it for some sort of agricultural use, correct?
Correct.
Does Culpeper County also participate in the statutory proffer system that Virginia has?
Yes.
Okay. And so consequently, if one owns a family farm and has kept it in land use taxation in order to be able to farm it profitably and rezones it prior to a closing to a developer, and that closing doesn't occur, then they would potentially have disastrous consequences for their agricultural operation. Is that correct?
Yes. As soon as the zoning is approved, your land use benefit goes away. So then you're taxed as if you're commercially zoned.
And you have to pay back taxes of 3 years, 5 years, something of that nature.
Correct.
And typically you would have to actually pay your proffers at the time of the rezoning, would you not?
Either at the time of the rezoning or there might be a condition that requires that you pay certain proffers. In a commercial context, there typically aren't monetary contributions that are required. There might be other things, but not monetary contributions.
So a landowner faced with this sort of a condemnation would really truly have a catch-22, or perhaps catch-22 million, depending upon what happens, what could possibly happen with the locality.
Correct, yeah. And so if they think a condemnation is coming, they could, in theory, apply. Then the locality could deny the zoning so that they don't have to spend as much money. All those machinations.
Family farm is in bankruptcy because.
How big a parcel, how big a percentage is this of the family farm that they condemn?
So they condemned a little over 2 acres, and that was all within the 31 and a half acres that were planned commercial. And it was all adjacent to those other industrially used properties.
So in an arm's length transaction, the buyer would say, okay, look, I'm guessing about the comprehensive plan working out and it's turning into commercial, but someone's going to have to pay the rollback tax, and I don't want to pay that, and that would be negotiated, I think.
It's a common term in a sale contract, who pays the rollback taxes, and typically it's the landowner, the seller, in that context.
Does WAMCO have any applicability to your argument? It seems to me that there the court said that factors outside of the landowner's control can't be considered because they would, by their nature, be speculative. Why wouldn't rezoning within the control of the county be outside of the landowner's control and fall squarely within that?
In WAMCO, if I remember, there were other landowners that needed to consent to certain things in order for the landowner having his land condemned theory and valuation to hold true. Here, we didn't have other landowners that would have to do things to get the value that we were arguing
for. But the county would have to do something, and the principle of law is if it's outside of the landowner's control, as I understand it, then it's speculative.
I don't think that that's a correct articulation of a per se rule that this court has adopted. And remember, what we're arguing is for the reasonable probability of rezoning to be considered as a factor in valuing the property, not to value the property as is. I'd like to state one more thing and then reserve the rest of time for rebuttal. The reasonable probability of rezoning concept has been on the tip of this court's tongue, and I think this will address your point, Your Honor. In Pruner, the court said, when valuing land, it is the duty of commissioners to consider all uses to which it may be reasonably adapted and to award compensation upon the basis of its most advantageous and valuable use. The uses to be considered must be so reasonably probable as to have an effect on the present value of the land. Purely imaginative or speculative value should not be considered. We're not in that purely imaginative and speculative value. There, the adaptability for subdivision uses, which were not yet approved, should have been considered as an element in the market value. Its use should not have been confined to that of agricultural loan. Here, the use of the property for commercial purposes, the reasonable probability of that happening should have been a factor. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Nancy Off. I'm with the Office of the Attorney General, and I represent the Commissioner of Highways. We're here this morning to respectfully request that this court affirm the rulings of Culpeper Circuit Court in this eminent domain proceeding that considered one of the most critically important factors in an eminent domain case, and that is the admissibility of remote and speculative evidence.
Suppose it weren't remote, suppose it wasn't speculative, and that there is a reasonable probability. Suppose that were, I know you disagree with that, but suppose there were a reasonable probability.
Then that would be a factor of consideration that should be considered by the Shires.
Okay, so it's in the comprehensive plan that this is what's planned. It's surrounded by commercial, 2 public roads coming in, all the taps, sewer taps are ready. You don't think a buyer would walk into that transaction and say, well, that's relevant to me. I don't know how much I'm going to put on it, but that's relevant. Don't you think a seller would say, you got to consider that, and you got to give me something for that, and then they negotiate the rollback taxes in the final agreement?
That's
the question, isn't it, whether a buyer and seller in a fair market transaction would do?
Yes, that is an important consideration, but this court has specified for decades that the considerations have to be something that are reasonably expected in the near future. Remote and speculative advantages and profits are not to be considered. So what is important here is not that the comprehensive plan included the possibility that this part of this property could be rezoned. It's whether it was, given the facts of this case, reasonably probable to happen close enough in time that it could be considered to impact the valuation of fair market value for this acquisition. And we do not believe that that was the case.
Your argument isn't that reasonable probability of rezoning is categorically excluded as something to consider in assessing fair market value. You're just saying, in this case, giving everything going on, just didn't apply.
That's correct. That's exactly our position. Clearly, when someone's property is taken for eminent domain, they get to tell what would impact the fair market value that's present on the date of take, but they don't get to go way in the future. That's remote and speculative.
Well, educate me on what a comprehensive plan is. Isn't a comprehensive plan a plan that's comprehensive, that you would like to do, you intend to do if all things work out?
The comprehensive plan is a plan. It's not an assurance of rezoning. It doesn't commit to rezoning. It says this is what the local government thinks will happen and would like to see happen
okay,
in the future,
this,
but other acts are necessary to get it rezoned.
That's not a reasonable probability. The local government is telling the citizens, we think this is going to happen. We're working towards this happening, and we're spending money towards this. We think it's really going to happen. This is what we're hoping happen. And all they're saying is, we want to say that to the fact finder. The municipality says they think it's going to happen.
Given the facts in this case, saying that fell into the category of being remote and a future occurrence.
We ultimately have to determine that.
Yes.
But and I don't know Culpeper County. I do know the facts of this case from the record. But I'm going to draw on Purcellville, Virginia, as a hypothetical, where with all overlaying these facts in a place where you've got a comprehensive plan, you've got an urban growth area. You don't have PAPs potentially. Actually, in the urban growth area, you would. And the only reason that family farmers in that area leave it in agricultural zoning is because of the land use tax, and it goes and it is, there's no doubt that it's going to get rezoned when it comes time for a sale. But you leave it in an A3 zone so that you can continue to farm it, and I just don't see how on these facts or on the facts of that hypothetical how it is remote or speculative.
Let me go through the things that we're missing
okay.
that this court has given us guidance in past need to be considered when we decide whether it's reasonably probable. One of the things is an application for rezoning. Others are site plans or plans that are developed by the property owner that shows he's taking actual concrete steps to move toward this rezoning, that it's going to happen in the near future, not sometime 20 years from now, but I'm doing things right now. I'm expending money for development expense, engineers, site development, seeking financing to rezone this to
all of those are part of a package if you decide that I'm not going to have the family farm any longer. If you decide I'm giving up the family farm, then everything you just mentioned is a bundle that all comes at the same time.
There also is missing in this case evidence of firm offers, much less a contract for the lease or other binding document for the sale or development of this property. And most importantly here, as was the case in the Glass case when we had a comprehensive plan tried to be used for the business plan of the property owner, there was no evidence that this property owner had any plans to develop any part of this property for any specifically identifiable purpose other than agricultural.
Well, the question is whether a buyer would do that, not whether the seller. The seller's given the property up entirely. The question is, would a buyer do that? Would a buyer say, yeah, one day I don't want to be planting wheat, I want to have a commercial enterprise here?
Well, let's look at this property in the before situation and its actual access to the roadways, because that does play a large part in whether this is likely to be paid, a buyer is likely to pay a commercial or industrial cost.
No, it's not pay it. It's not value it as a commercial property. It is to enhance and be relevant to the purchase price. It may be 3% relevant to the purchase price.
Right.
He's not saying that he has a right to a commercial valuation, and as a matter of law, if you give me anything less, you're in the wrong. He's saying, I want the fact finder to know that this could and probably will one day be used as a commercial property, and a reasonable buyer and seller would talk about that and factor it into the negotiations.
But the access to the roadways in the poor situation were not the type of access that you normally see for a property zoned commercially or industrial. One of the roads, Poor Farm Road, was a gravel road. The other one, the access, was a stove pipe. It was very narrow to Route 666, which was Greens Corner Road.
That's a great point. Why isn't that a great weight of the evidence point, but not a great admissibility of the evidence point?
What the trial court seems to have found here was that given the fact that rezoning is the act of a requires the act of a third party, the county, it's speculative and inadmissible. For evidence for the reasonable probability of rezoning to have come in, we need some concrete facts from the property owner that are completely missing in this case. He didn't do any of these things that this court has found are relevant to that process. Therefore, if we look at the Glass case, where we had a property owner who said his business plan that he needed to establish a unity of use was that he was going to follow the comprehensive plan and maximize his profits, this court clearly said that that kind of a plan was illusory, nothing more than an idle hope that the property would be valuable for an unknown future commercial purpose. And that is exactly the situation here. Mr. Helmick hadn't made any plans to use those sewer taps at any time in the near future. We had no evidence of what they would be used for or when they would be used. The trial court properly held that this was remote and speculative and that it couldn't be admissible because to get the property rezoned, and particularly given these facts, it was remote and speculative and properly, we believe, withheld that evidence.
Do you draw a distinction in that analysis between the property taken and the residual property taken, the residue damage?
There was no residue damage testified to in this case.
Conceptually, the purpose is reasonable probability, focusing on the buyer, focusing on the seller, and the disparate interests the buyer and seller would have. Do you draw a conceptual distinction between the property taken, the fee simple absolute taking, and the residue damages of the remainder of the tract?
For purposes
of reasonable probability of rezoning under a damage calculation.
I still think the same principles apply. Are there facts and evidence that indicate that this rezoning is going to happen in the near future? Or is it a situation where it might happen sometime? It's not enough to influence the willing buyer and seller on the date of take. I'd like to move on to a consideration of the appraisal and the properties, the problems with that. As you know, this landowner's appraiser opined that the highest and best use of this property was to be rezoned to industrial or commercial on the date of take. As we've discussed earlier, because rezoning is an act dependent on an act of a third party under WAMCO, it's remote and speculative as a matter of law, and we believe that that made this appraisal remote and speculative and inadmissible in an eminent domain proceeding.
So as a matter of law, a future rezoning that's not yet executed by the locality can never, until it actually happens, be factored into the fair market value of the property taken?
No. If we look at, let me get the case here for you, Lynch. In that case, there had been an application for rezoning. It hadn't been granted, but it was being acted upon, and there was evidence that it was very probable that it was going to be granted. And that was admissible, and that would be a situation where it should be considered. Because it was not something that was going to happen way in the future. It was almost imminent. I'd like to look at the comparable sales of the appraisal, if I might. The property owner used comparables that were commercial and light industrial in character, whereas the commissioner used agricultural sales from Culpeper County. If you look at the resulting valuation from the use of these comparables, you will see while the trial court was so concerned about their use, the per acre valuation using agricultural comparables was $6,300 per acre. On the other hand, using the comparables that were commercial and industrial in nature resulted, even after a 10% reduction, in a valuation of $130,000 per acre. $130,000 versus $6,300 per acre represents a 20.6 times increase in valuation. These comparables in the appraisal were simply not fair comparisons. They were not sufficiently similar to the situation on the date of take, to the property on the date of take, and they weren't admissible because the mere proximity is not a test that stands by itself. There are many other conditions that have to be considered when you determine whether comparable sales are admissible.
Well, what about the AEP and Pruner cases?
The Pruner case?
And the AEP.
Well, that case, the land was agricultural. It was on a road that many houses had been built along, and part of it was in the town. And the court there found that this property was ready for subdivision, and to talk about it being subdivided in the near future was it admissible. So there are times when the facts indicate that this is what is happening right now, and it's not unlikely that it's going to happen at the time of the taking. So therefore, it's admissible.
Well, actually, though, in the Pruner case, they talk about specifically the prospective value. So that doesn't sound like right now.
I think, well, the prospective value, given the knowledge of that community, and I think that's what is important, was that it would probably be used that way. And I see my time is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. As to assignments of error 4 and 5, I'd like to rest on the papers. There's been a concession that the reasonable probability of rezoning is something that should be considered in Virginia eminent domain cases, and we think that that ought to be the case. So then why not in this case? The only argument that counsel can come up with is that we didn't apply for a rezoning. I would submit to you that had we applied and there was a zoning application pending, that would just increase the value even more from what we were arguing. What an appraiser would probably do is look at how much money was spent on that application and then say, well, that's something that a buyer doesn't now have to spend, and therefore I'm going to increase the value of the property per those expenditures. So we just do not believe that there's, in the facts of this case, any good reason why the reasonable probability of rezoning and the evidence that was submitted on that point should not have been submitted. We think that in the Oaks case, which was not discussed, but we're not in that context. We're not trying to talk about future profits from a building that doesn't exist and valuing our compensation in that manner. We're just saying that this should be a factor that should be considered that makes this property more valuable. In the Hilton case, it was conceded that the presence of minerals could be something that would increase the value of the property. But then the other things that hadn't yet occurred, like building a mine and what profits would come from that mine, could not be considered. Again, we're not in the context of trying to argue about a mine that doesn't exist on the property. We're like the minerals. We have a comprehensive plan that designates our property commercial and therefore makes it more valuable. We had access. That's not an issue. That's a red herring. We laid out in our brief how our property clearly had access to two public roads.
What about the argument that VDOT had to approve access for rezoning?
On a by right basis or even after a rezoning, VDOT would have to give the property access. And we have 2,000 feet of frontage. There are state law and regulations that require them to provide properties
not really,
access.
Not really an issue.
Yeah, it's punching and pulling, essentially. So, Your Honor, we believe that our client should be given the opportunity to be on a level playing field so that just compensation can equal fair market value. Thank you very much.